Okay, thank you. I want to thank the organizers for this opportunity. It's very nice to be here. And today I'm going to talk about explicit multi-loop amplitude computations using the Peer-Spinner formalism. And the talk will be based on these three papers. This last one here with Humberto Gomes and Oliver Schlotter, where we computed the five-point amplitude at two loops. And then this paper from 2013 with Humberto Gomes, where we computed the four-point amplitude at three loops. And in also, I'm going to use many results that were set up in this paper in 2010 with Humberto Gomes, where we computed the three four-point amplitudes at tree level. One and two loops. And this is where we basically set up how the computations should be done, including the overall coefficients for everything. So the talk here, so in this talk, I will try to convince you that doing amplitude calculations at across loop orders is not doesn't involve too much computation from passing from one loop to another. So I will do this one and 4 points and 5 points at two loops and 4 points at three loops. And I highlighted the 5 point at two loops and 4 point at three loops because unfortunately the current understanding that we have about the big ghost restricted the calculation of these amplitudes to be just the low energy limit. So this highlight here is the low energy limit of the amplitudes. And I think you could already notice from Oliver's talk that we have these building blocks that are computed from the string amplitude, and they all look the same. I mean, he had a one loop building block which was something like containing just one bar here, and then it satisfied a BRST algebra that looked very similar to this one. So everything looks pretty much the same, whether you are at one loop, two loop, or three loops. The details that change when you change the loop order, the details change very little. And I hope I can convince you of that today. And okay, so the talk will be, I will simply do, I will show to you what are the kind of things that you need to do when you decide, okay, now I'm going to sit down and I want to compute the four-pointed tree loops. So what are the steps that you need to do when you decide to compute the amplitude? And so I will start with the prescription. So that's the starting line. That's the prescription that Nathan came up with in 2005. And these tau i's here are called the Theiss-Müller parameters. They parametrize the different genus G surfaces, and this N here is the regulator that you've seen in Nathan's talk this morning. Well, this is the dreaded B ghost, and this mu I is the Beltrami differential. And these U's are the integrated vertices. And okay, when you want to compute the one loop amplitude, the details here change a bit, because you will have only one Theiss-Müller parameter. Accordingly, you have only one insertion of the B ghost, and then you need to change. You need to use the unintegrated vertex operator instead of the integrated one. That's the only thing that changes at this level. And these SGs are some symmetry factors that can give you sleepless nights sometimes. And they They have these values here, and three loops and higher. It's one. So that's the prescription. I hope I wrote. Okay, and so now what this angle bracket means. Oh, and by the way, this denotes the holomorphic square. So this is for the closed string. So I'm computing closed string amplitudes. So this is the holomorphic square, where you simply multiply everything that you see there with tilde variables from the right moving side. And I need to tell you what this angle bracket means. I will write down first. It's for me. Well, okay. Theta, and then all the 3g-3. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Um, So this is a CFT, and as Nathan was explaining this morning, you start by eliminating the non-zero modes using the OPEs of the variables that he described. And after you do that, my understanding of the angle bracket there is that this is the zero mode integration that you need to have a prescription to integrate. So this is not really the standard way where that people understand these angle brackets, but this is how it will be interpreted here today. So what I want to say is that when I'm at this level, I already consider that I integrated the non-zero modes. And the pure spinor form, the non-minimal pure spinor formalism depends on many variables that I've written here. And for each of these variables, you need to consider, okay, I integrate the non-zero modes and the zero modes. And for the zero modes, you will need these measures that I wrote there. And I've just written down two measures here explicitly, just to show to you that we have complete control over the normalizations of these measures. And this T with five spinor indices is that combination that people were discussing today that ultimately gives rise to this scalar measure for lambda 3 theta 5 variables. So whenever you see something like this, I want you to know that there are very explicit expressions for what these measures mean, and they all come with very precise normalizations that we in this paper here we showed how these measures how the normalizations of these measures would work for any loops in principle. And so as Nathan was explaining today, these at when you are computing three-level amplitudes, the zero modes of these variables are the only ones present. And when you go to loop level, then you start to get zero modes for the conformal weight one variables. So these guys here have conformal weight zero, and well, the originating fields that have these zero modes have conformal weight zero, and these have conformal weight one. By the way, I should point out that this is how you expand a conformal weight one variable in terms of these are the zero modes. And these are the holomorphic one forms. So okay, so as was also mentioned this morning by Nathan, the integration over the non-zero modes needs to be done using the OPEs, and also you need to consider the partition function. But the partition function will be one because you have the same number of fermionic and bosonic variables. And so right from the beginning, the manipulation, the computations are already simpler. You don't need to consider the partition function. But okay, right, and I should also tree level is in some sense trivial to compute, so at least the zero mode part here. So it makes sense for us to define a angle bracket with P with a subscript P and G. That simply means that you are integrating over the things that are present at tree level. So this tree level here means that combination, and then you have the superfield there, which depends on lambda bar theta r divided by lambda bar the power 3 minus p, and then the contribution from the regulator. So it will make sense to have this definition simply because you are factoring out the tree level part of the computation that you can simply leave to the very end because it doesn't really cause you any troubles when doing loop computation. And but okay, so this is all in the nominal formalism, but we know from the minimal formalism that the measure lambda 3 theta 5 plays an essential role. And we are going to see that here as well, because it will make sense to have a standard notation for this measure here, where this combination means the minimal variable contraction that was defined by Nathan in 2000. And at this point here, you are integrating over these measures here. And as you can see in the normalization of the measures, this number here, well, this guy here is equal to a number, that there is some number, but then there is a dependence on the area of the Riemann surface, and I just want to get the coefficient right. There is the in principle, this measure here in a genus G surface depends on the area of the Riemann surface. And you can see that from the measures that the normalizations of the measures, they contain the area. But what's important? But what's important is at the very end, you will always have this contribution let me explain this to you. So these are the plane wave factors that are contained in the superfields in the vertex operators. And so when you integrate over the zero the when you integrate over the zero modes of x, and you get the standard momentum conservation factor. But you also get the factor of the area there. Well, and by the way, you also get a factor of the determinant of del del bar to the power 5, and this guy will be canceled by the other contributions of the zero mode variables. So what I want to emphasize here is that at the very end, you can use a standalone formula for that, which will already take into account that you integrated the non-zero modes using the partition function, and you will also get the explicit cancellation of the area of the Riemann surface. So in the end, you will get something like I will just write some numbers here, but they are you should not get too carried away. And then you get the standard Kolbe-Nielsen factor. Gij is the scalar Green's function, but this is a formula that you keep written down somewhere, because you know that you are going to use it at the very end of the computation. And it, as I said, it takes into account that the partition function was evaluated to cancel that that factor of the determinant here. And you also see that it doesn't depend on the area of the Riemann surface. So even though the intermediate steps depend on the area, how you parameterize the surface, the end result doesn't, and we can see that very explicitly from the measures. Okay, and everything here is will be written in terms of superspace. Everything here will be written in superspace, and in the very end of the computation, you will simply have some superfield combination like this, where if you want, you can extract the precise component of this of the superfields that you have there. And for that, you are going to use this prescription here. But that is completely automated, and we don't really care about the components when doing the computation. That's just at the very end, when you say, okay, I'm finished. I computed something that I can check its BRST invariant. Now I'm going to do the component expansion to get, say, an operator of the six as the force or something else. That is not that is not something that you need to worry about. This is completely automated. You just press enter and that's it. So let's start.
During discussion. try to
when did they start?
45.
Okay, so now I'm good. Different. Okay. Just to be sure. This is the setup. So now let's start doing the computation. Say, but I'm going to spend some time. So the first step in the computation, I will integrate the positions of the big ghost, and you will see why of the big ghost. And after I'm done with that, I will consider the non-zero modes. So I will I will do OPE computations if necessary, and then I will use the zero mode measures. To finish the computation. Okay, zero mode integrations. So let's do the integration over the big O's positions. And as you will see, the computation will be very similar for any genus, at least up to genus 3. And I need to recall that today the big ghost will be this expression here, that there will be just these two terms. The other terms won't contribute in the computations that I'm going to present, but and the big goals today will be just the zero mode part of it. And that's related to this low energy limit for the 5-point and 4-point three loops. Okay, so the big goals to do that computation, I'm going to use the zero mode expansion of these variables here for the D variables in the bingo. So let's do that. So let's look at the first term, and I'm going to drop the coefficient here, but you can it will be convenient to define, to have a shortcut for the things that I'm going to write down. The shortcut is the following. So this is a fermionic variable. That means this contraction. So let's expand the zero modes of the big O's. Using the zero mode expansion there. Let's do one loop first. One loop, you will get this this term here, where now this y variable is the position of the big O's. And you just have one zero mode at one loop. So you get just this term. And then for the second one, okay, and if you want to, there is also lambda bar squared. And for the other term, you will get the expansion of the zero mode of the pi m variable, which as Oliver was, he briefly mentioned that it translates to the loop momentum in the field theory language, but this is what you will get for the second term. Okay. So that's the zero mode expansion of the big ghost, and now you need to, I'm going to consider the integration over, well, when I contract with the Beltrami differential, and let's see what, did I write that at some,
no. Omega is the holomorphic differential.
No, omega is the holomorphic one form. At genus one, this is one, but I'm just writing there to be explicit. But okay, so what I forgot to write down is the definition of that term. which is simply that you contract you multiply the B field by the Beltrami differential, and when you insert this expansion here, you will get a combination of these holomorphic one forms with the Beltrami, and the Beltrami here will have the index one. So and at this point, you need to use we are going to use a formula for that integration, which is this one. Ij d tau I, and that's called the Hau variational formula. It's very convenient for integrating over the position of the beagle. You don't really need to know explicit details about the Beltrami to do that. So if you use this formula here, you will see that this term there combines to becomes this factor here. Okay, so for genus one, the period matrix is trivial. Well, it's not a matrix; it's a scalar, and the Teich-Muller parameter is. Okay, so and from now on, to save a bit of time, I will not write the part from the vector from the vector from the pi m zero mode, just save time, but this is what you get. And now you will see that when you integrate over the using the Beltrami differential, you will see. Oh, okay, and I should use the holomorphic square here. So everything is holomorphic square, holomorphic square, holomorphic square, and then you get this vector here, and this term here is just the period matrix. So you will get lambda r d1 holomorphic square, and then the integration where now the period matrix is parametrizing your Riemann surface instead of the Teich-Muller parameter.
So the denominator 1 over lambda square?
Oh, I drop it. It's there. As well as 192.
Yeah, yeah.
And 2 pi. But you yeah. Oh, by the way, 2 pi should be squared here because yeah. But okay, so you
does R has ghost number minus one?
Well, the ghost numbers here. It's minus one. Well, what's the ghost number of R? It's
R is d lambda bar.
So it's plus one.
No, it should be zero. I'm sorry. I think it's R is d lambda bar. You have a choice. If you choose lambda bar as ghost number minus one, R has ghost number zero. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Now it's clear.
Yeah.
Now it's clear.
Yeah, sorry about that. Okay. So you can see where this is going. For the one loop case, you get the period matrix. And so what happens at two loops? At two loops, the expansion will be very similar. I'm going to. And then plus 2 times lambda bar r v1 v2 w1 w2 omega 1 plus and when you integrate this becomes the period matrix 1 1, this becomes the period matrix 1 2, and this becomes the period matrix 2 2. So when you integrate everything, okay, so and at two loops you will have 3 such factors. And each of these factors here is fermionic. So when you multiply everything, you can have multiple choices, whether you pick omega 1 1 from here, or from there. And because you can organize these variables in a canonical way, the effect of doing that is just that you get the overall anti-symmetrization on the choices. So you will get the Jacobian factor. You will get something like this. I1 and then e tau I2. I3 and okay, square. So now when you integrate over the Theiss-Müller, tau 1, tau 2, tau 3, you are simply converting it to the parametrization in terms of the period matrix. So that becomes and you can do exactly the same calculation at 3 loops, and you will also get a precise conversion from the Theiss-Müller to the period matrix parametrization, and that's where the fun stops. For genus 1, 2, and 3, you can do that very very precisely. You get all the factors right, but for genus 4. That's where the Schottky problem hits you. But at this point, I would like to be optimistic and consider that perhaps the prescription will simply tell you what are the precise linear combinations that will do this conversion for you. You will have 9 factors of the period of the Theiss-Müller, something like this, and ideally you want to get the period matrix where now you have 10 such factors, and these computations here will simply multiply these factors here by some linear combination of these terms here. And I would like to be hopeful that will tell us that this is how to organize this parametrization shift. Okay. So that's something to work. Okay, so what do we have at this point? When you consider this for genus 1, 2, and 3, you will get an expression which is of this form. You will have the period matrix and then some combination of operators that I'm going to denote by that, like this, by 1 and then up to there are g factors of these guys, and these b's will be simply will look like let me just write the two loop the one loop guy is b with two zero modes of d. That's how it looks like. That there is the lambda bar pole. And then similarly at three two loops you will have lambda bar to the power 6 and lambda r d1 lambda bar d1 d2, and then lambda bar r d2 d2. And similarly for the three loops, it's just more of the same thing here. And with the vector index there, it's the analogous of this operator here. So everything at this point is done. You have just the zero modes of D. So this term here takes into account all the Beltrami and the big ghost insertions that you have here. So what remains to be done is now you need to integrate using the zero mode you need to integrate the other fields. So I just integrated out the big ghost. Let's do that. So that's the second part here. And you can see that the computation is just more of the same, no matter of the loop order that you are. And so now we need to integrate over the remaining variables. And one observation that you can do is that these variables here appear just in the regulator, so you can immediately integrate them out by using this formula here. And then that is there is some power of I'm just writing this because I happen to remember that by heart, but so now you see the contraction of an epsilon tensor with 16 indices, the T tensor that I wrote there, and the zero modes, 11 zero modes of D. They came from here because we integrated the S variable, so we pulled 11 zero modes of D. So this guy here contains 11 with G entries of D I zero mode. So At this point, we already integrated almost everything except the D0 mode. So let's keep that in mind. So when you arrive at this point, it becomes convenient to define something like this, where you simply say that you are integrating over the remaining D0 modes of some operator of this form. So the amplitude at this point will look like that there will be some number here depending on the genus, and you will have the integration over the Riemann surface of something of this form, where and then the plane waves, where this subscript here means that you need to integrate over the D0 modes, and the subscript PG means you still need to do the zero mode integrations at tree level. And this form of the amplitude is pretty universal. So for example, for one loop, the expression looks like you have some D13 plus pi M1 DM12, and then at two loops you have some D14. 14 plus some vector part, and at three loops you get some D15 15 15, and they all look the same. You are doing the computation simultaneously for one, two, and three loops. It's just that the combinatorics becomes a bit more convoluted, but it's all doable with pen and paper. Oh yes. So these are the operators, and you still have the vertices. So that is where the technology of the multiparticle vertices will come, because
so when you compare different loops, are you comparing leading orders in alpha prime? Say they all look the same.
No.
Because
that,
you said at three loops you can just do the leading order.
Yeah. So the fact that I just wrote this one, and I could have written the vector ones at three loops. If I had considered the non-zero modes of the big host, in principle, that there would be more of these operators to take care. But that's it. So in principle, we are missing something here at three loops, even for 4 points. The same thing doesn't happen at one loop. For up to five points, we don't face that problem, because the non-zero modes of the big host will not contribute anyway, but they start contributing at 6 points. And for 4 points at two loops, you are also very safe, just the zero modes contributed. So to finish, I'm going to do the explicit computation of this D13 at one loop, and then after that, I will just okay. I think I'm going to save some time here. So at one loop, you arrive at a point where you need to integrate over these guys. And let's do 4 points to see what happens. So I'm doing one loop, so it starts with V1 and then U2. And that is the following integration. So lambda R U1 U1. And now you need to separate, you need to pick three the zero modes from the vertices, and there is just one way to do that. You pick and this integral here can be done by using the following formula. Epsilon T D and then five D's. I'm running out of time, so I will be very schematic here. That is just that there is a number here, and then you get that T tensor, the same T tensor that appeared before for the lambda 3 theta 5. So you can do this computation very explicitly, and you will get the building block that Oliver was telling you. Well, the non-minimal version of that building block. So you will get something like this. Okay, V1 there, W2, W3, W4. That's the, it corresponds precisely to that building block that Oliver was using. And now, suppose you want to do 5 points. You still need to saturate 3 zero modes, and you have more variables here, more fields. But so you can do the same zero mode saturation by using multiparticle superfields, where you use it where now you can use a OPE to reduce the number of superfields. So for example, in this case, I use the OPE del G23, and you see the same zero mode will just the same integration here will just mean that you change the labels there to be multiparticle labels. So this 2 becomes 2, 3. This 4 this 3 becomes a 4. This 4 becomes a 5, and you have a del G23. So once you do 4 points, you can do 5 points in 1 minute. You just need to consider a few ways to collide the vertices. So and then you can do the same, exactly the same analysis to get the vector building block that Oliver was describing, and then you get also the multiparticle version of that. So that was one loop. At two loops, you do the same thing again, and instead of using this simple zero mode term, you will use this one, which is not that bad. And again, you for example, let's do 4 points at two loops. You will need to integrate over D14, 14, because you are picking that one, and because, well, you sum over 11. So you see you need 16 to saturate the zero mode. So every single vertex here we require a D zero mode. And Let me just write down. D2 W3, then D2 W4, and now you have also the holomorphic bond forms at position 1, then position 2, and then position 3, 2 at position 4. And there will be more possibilities to pick the D1. D1 can come from here, from there, and from all the other possibilities, and then you just get some permutations of this combination here. But in the end, when you integrate over the D0 modes, you will get a building block which is of this form. TABC/TAB/CD, where the slash means the separation of the 1-0 modes from the 2-0 modes, and that corresponds to the building block that Oliver was using to construct the field theory amplitudes. But you also get some holomorphic one forms there. And once you do the combinatorics, you will see that you will get, say, in this case, you will get some combination of holomorphic, the biholomorphic, the contraction, well, the anti-symmetrized combination of one forms. And that's 4 points to loop. Very schematically, because at this point you kind of have the idea how these things work, and I think I should stop here, but of course I was not emphasizing the coefficients, but everything in the end has a very precise coefficient in front, and there is no difficulty in getting the coefficients. And so I'm sorry I didn't do three loops, but it's more of the same thing. It's like Yogi Bear said once, it's all it's deja vu all over again. So that's what. No, yeah, I'm using that zero mode expansion here.
What is D?
D is the Green-Schwarz constraint. It's
the alpha plus.
Yeah, it's something like that. So
when you're talking about the zero modes of D,
X, that's
the
D X.
So this is polynomial. So when you talk about the zero modes of D, what do you mean?
So I mean that this D alpha depends on Z, right? So I say that this is D alpha hat of Z, where these are the non-zero modes, and then I'm going to say that this is the.
But presumably P also is the composite to a P hat and a P I.
Oh yes, it's much more convenient to use this combination here instead of doing the computations with P alpha and then carrying around all these extra terms. It's the supersymmetric version that really is important, and not the P alpha.
Is it a Jacobian between D and P is trivial?
So I should think of when you write D1, I should think about this being contrasted with some.
No, D1 is.
Yes, with something.
Is the zero mode of. So it's contracting the holomorphic one form. And this guy here has no Z dependence. It's just the zero mode.
So I understand that. So this D. I guess what confused me is if I decompose the free field into zero mode and non-zero mode, this zero mode of D will contain non-zero mode of the free field.
I think you phrased the question right quite clearly, whether the Jacobian is trivial or not. Jacobian, when you change from the P zero mode integral towards the D zero mode integral.
I mean, I can understand if the I is the contraction of the integral over the Riemann surface of D of Z against some. What is it, the vector of D of Z? No. The dual. But I mean, it's not just the zero mode of the field. I mean, it's something that looks very complicated. So, how do you, then, when you say you have the
zero mode, you still have, as you said, you have 16 G P alpha zero.
Yeah, but he's not working with the zero mode of P, he's working
with
zero mode of D.
After integrating off the non-zero mode, the D alpha zero mode are the same. I mean, that's the only place the P alpha zero mode can come from.
Right.
D alpha.
Okay.
So counting the D alpha zero mode is the same as counting the P alpha.
So when he does the expectation value of the product of D,
yeah.
So the non-zero modes, you're right, because D alpha can contract with other things through the D.
Yes, that's right.
I suppose you've done all the non-zero modes.
Yes.
Then, just a fermionic.
But how can you? I guess, so you're saying there are some zero modes for P, they need to contract something. And the only place of zero mode of P exists in the whole expression is here inside the zero mode of P. And that's just as many zero mode of P. Okay. So you're saying that the product of these becomes a product of P.
So what's the problem with the Beagles that restricts you to leading order and alpha prime at loops?
Oh yeah, because these terms here are a mess. For example,
and they should just absolute, so what's the point?
What? No, it's well, For the computations that we did, they don't contribute simply because you don't get well, if you consider the zero mode of the big one.
Yes.
So they don't contribute because they don't provide enough the zero modes to in the end saturate the integration over the D's, because we are not doing too many points here. So when you restrict yourself to these lower point amplitudes, you cannot afford to lose the contributions from the D zero modes from the big O. So you need to take these two or this one here. Yeah, if you wish. Yeah. But that's when the restriction is about the zero mode of the Vigors. And you can see that if you in principle start to consider OPEs with the BGOS, for example, by simple dimensional analysis, for example, for 4-point tree loops, say you pick, okay, that might take like 3 minutes to explain, but
this part of the discussion.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. So why did I say that we get the low energy limit? By discarding non-zero modes of the big O set three loops, for example. So suppose you pick the non-zero mode of the big O. So at three loops you get 6 big O's, and suppose that 5 of them are of this form, where you pick the first term there from for 5 big ghosts, and the another big ghost you take, well, the same one, but now not the zero mode, but the non-zero mode guy, and you use this one to contract via OPEs with the vertices. Okay, so let's see how that works. You get 11 Ds here, and you will get 11 from the regulator. So okay, and then U1, U2, U3, U4, and you contract this one with so you will see that so to saturate the zero modes, now every vertex needs to provide a zero mode of D, because let's see if I did this counting correct. Say that is 33 and then 44, and then you have 3 times 16 zero modes at G3, so that's 48. So you need 4 D zero modes out of the vertices. But you are also now contracting this one using the OPE. So this guy will contract with one of the W's. So the contribution from the vertices will be something that you can write like this. It will be of this form. And you will have 6 R's as well. So and I didn't explain, but the R's become D's when you evaluate the zero mode. So just from this sketch of the argument, you will have these superfields contributing in this case. And then say, well, that there will be the OPE with this B goes there, say the position 0, and then at some I here, which you can pick anyone. So now let's see what's the component order, the mass dimension of this guy. So the first thing you can do is you convert 3 derivatives by hitting on W to get Fs. So you get these 3 Fs, and now each T can hit an F to get you momentum times W. So you get something of this form with 3 momenta there. And you still need to to look at the lambda 3 theta 5 component out of these, and you can pick 1, 1, 1 and 2 thetas from the superfields. The 1 theta component is an F. So you get, oh, I'm using the same F, but say it's the component F, and then the theta 2 component of F is a momentum times F. So you had also 3 momenta there. So in the end, the component mass dimension of this guy is 4 momenta times 4 field strengths. And the holomorphic square of this is of the d8 r to the fourth. So yeah, I think I did it right. So when you consider the non-zero modes of the big ghost, you see that the terms that you are missing are of a higher order, because the other terms that we computed are of this form. And yeah, okay, whoa, so I got the counting right.
And for this guy, there is no constraint mass duality or
anything. Oh, that you should ask Michael, but for this one there is an S-duality prediction, but not for this one at three loops. Is that correct? Or do you know what the coefficient of this one is at three loops from S-duality?
I'm doing a very naive guess.
Okay. Yeah.
Why is it even a very naive guess if it's not BPS at all?
Sorry, I overstated it. When I said it's very naive, I meant it's extremely. it looks as though a piece of that coefficient, the non-derivative coefficient, should be the Eisenstein series E7 parts. E3 halves, E5 halves, and E7 halves come in a sort of natural looking way. And E7 halves gets has a tree level and tree loop piece. But there's probably other stuff also. It would just be very nice if E7 halves appeared in your face.
But there's no prediction based on supersymmetry that it should play any equation, right?
There isn't, I hope.
Is it different?
It's naively a detail. But that was related to the discussion with this. I mean, naive counting should be. Although there's some complicated story about the counter terms.
This is not. If you're discussing counter terms in n equals 4, with 8 and 4 dimensions, there might be more constraints. But if you're just asking, without assuming continuous duality, what d8 r to the fourth is possible, it seems relatively obvious that there's an arbitrary function on the fundamental domain. I think. Because you can start with anything and then integrate it deeper into
it. But isn't it confusing? A string theory actually gives a precise number.
Yes. A definite theory gives a definite answer.
Right. There isn't a choice of theory. So there must be some constraint.
All I was saying is that it would appear.
Yeah.
I feel this is what you said, actually.
Yes.
It would appear that there is no constraint that comes just from supersymmetry.
I agree.
That's to be contrasted with what people are talking about when they worry about four-dimensional field theory, where they assume continuous neutral.
Do you understand correctly that you never had to deal with the determinant of the non-zero mod? Any number of lengths?
Yeah, yeah. Because they cancel. Simply because I wrote here that the non-zero modes, the counting of non-zero modes of the fermionic variables, it's 32 plus 20, so it's 54. And then here, hopefully you get 54 as well. So the So from this part, you will get, say, some determinant fermionic is 1 over, no, it's determinant of, say, 27 or something. And from this part, you will get minus 27. So they cancel. So you don't need to consider.
But you can propagate those.
Propagate?
LG. Derivatives of the Green's function.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay. So, not for the partition function. Just for the OPEs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I missed what you said before, but did you say that no in principle is how to calculate the PPA function? The first non-leading correction.
Yeah, I think I said that, yes. but
many different
sources. Yes, it's true. For example, so that's why I think it should be doable at some point, but not yet. But because, for example, we have an expression for the d to the 6, r to the 4. And in particular, this one has this Kobe-Nielsen factor, something like that. So if you expand this guy, you pick 1 plus s times something, and then that contributes to d8, r to the 4. But you also get contributions to d to the 8, r to the 4th directly from things like this. So you don't need to expand the Kobe-Nielsen factor to see these terms in principle.
To get the total, you need to do both.
Yeah, yeah.
And
doing
that first thing is pretty difficult.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Well, the first thing lands you on the 3-loop version of the Chankamazumi
invariant. That's why I said it is different.
Yeah.
I heard in various talks that somehow you believe that it cannot be in the final answer. Did I get it right?
No.
But that's not
the thing with Zhen and Kawazumi would probably in the genus phi Zhen.
Ah, but a similar projector using inverse period matrices. Okay.
Yeah, so that will take a bit more time to get. But,
Do you want to get it?
Of course, yeah. I didn't explicitly mention that, but the goal is to have the endpoint at L-loop amplitude. it will take some time, but let's be optimistic. Yeah, so does anybody know about this Schottky problem parametrization that I say? If I want to convert the integration over the Teich-Muller parameters at genus 4, and then I will have some mass here, well, not really a mass, but nine factors of d omega 1 for example, things like this, and then there will be in total 10 terms like that. Does anybody know if that combination here might magically land you in the period in the full 10 period matrix measure by some, I don't know, because if that doesn't happen, then I think we might have a bit of problem, but I think that on the other hand, the prescription might be used constructively to go from this parametrization to that parametrization, and that's my hope.
You're gonna get a 9 form.
Yeah.
In
yes. Yes. Yeah, so yeah. So for example, the Schottky problem here is that 9 is different from 10 here, but that I don't know if this parametrizes some delta function constraint, or I don't know what. So that's
well,
why.
The subspace is known. It's the vanishing of the monomial form. That monomial form is known. But what that measure is, that's. What G equals what? G equals
what? They might be able to promote that where the integral would be in D to the 10. Over written a function.
Yes, we'll send out the function.
We're just a complete integral of one over written a function.
But is that outright crazy to think that something like this might happen? That you convert nine of these one forms to 10 of these one forms, or? Oh. Okay, so I guess not. But let's see, that's for loops. It's a bit further.
Sometimes it's happening. Like you're an integral of the quintic. Then you can remember this integral of the whole CP4 of something with an extra denominator.
Okay, yeah. So first I think I need to work out what are the precise combinations here that will appear, and then I will see what happens. But if that is, say, that there is some magic happening here, then I think the prescription with the zero modes of these factors here, and using this formula here might give a constructive way to, well, I don't know if that's solving or, well, the Schottky problem at least at this level, but. That's definitely what we need for simplifying the amplitudes. And I hope that happens. Otherwise,
any more topics of discussion?
We don't have a topic. Okay, so thank you, everyone, and let's thank the